right, Kim. I think one of the things that we are really hoping to is to get rid of liver biopsy and to be able to stage patients without having to put them through invasive procedures. And I know that there's lots of care pathways that are really dependent on accurately identifying patients at risk. What did we learn at EASL?
So this is a study. It's called the Litmus study, and really the goal is, as you pointed out, we've been struggling, right, with the MASLD trials because the endpoints for the FDA are biopsy driven, and so there we've looked. I say we broadly, the hepatology community doing these clinical trials has looked broadly to try to identify, are there non-invasive markers, one, that can identify patients, right, to get into a clinical trial? So we're not biopsying patients who are never going to make it into a clinical trial, but also to use them prognostically, right, to see have people responded in the absence of a biopsy. So this study was really trying to answer the first one, was to look at identifying patients with at-risk MASH. So we've defined that as patients who, have now a MASH score of 4 or greater and F2 or higher, or those patients who have advanced fibrosis, so F3 or cirrhosis F4, because those are typically the categories, right, that we get into clinical trials. So there were 357 patients, and they had a multitude of imaging studies as well as biomarkers at the beginning of the study, and these were correlated with their entry biopsy, right? So there were 357 patients, and I'll get down to the bottom, which was the only one that was close to identifying a patient who was at risk. So a patient that we should be considering for a clinical trial was the NIS2, which is a combination of two biomarkers. It's not commercially available, but was used in this clinical study. When you get to more advanced fibrosis, MRE did have a significant ability to identify patients with advanced fibrosis. And then when you looked at patients trying to identify those with cirrhosis, there were additional non-invasive markers, including MRE, but including VCTE, which many people have access to, as well as Agile 3 and Agile 4. And if people are not familiar with that, that is sort of a compilation of laboratory data as well as VCTE, KPA scores to calculate those scores. So these studies, I think, in terms of identifying patients at entry into clinical trials, what I take away from this is that patients who have more advanced fibrosis, MRE is very good. Some additional testing, especially when you get to F4 patients, are better or more easily identified. But it's really that at-risk patient population where we struggle to identify the patient accurately. And unfortunately, we look based on FIB4 and VCTE, and those didn't seem to be very predictive at identifying the at-risk population. So I'm sure the study will go on and look also for prognostic implications and try to identify those patients who have had a response in the absence of having to do a biopsy.
So, I mean, you can understand why why a clinical trial has to have such accurate, markers, right? If you're going to lead to approving something that might be beneficial for nearly a third of America or, the world, you really want to make sure that it's going to do the job that you say it is. But care pathways, when you get outside of a clinical trial, have to be simple. We can't be, trying to get our primary care providers or the first wave of individuals who see someone with fatty liver disease to do staging that's complicated. I mean, I know I even struggled with trying to get my primary care and endocrinologist to do FIB4 to use as a threshold to send them to me. They're getting better at recognizing fatty liver. They're just not getting very, they're not, and it's not fair to say they're not very good at it. They just don't probably make the effort to differentiate out a patient that they should keep compared to one that really needs to be linked to the clinic.
Yeah, it was just, I found it somewhat disappointing because, again, it's really that at-risk population that we're asking, the community to identify. And the closest test was the NIST2, but, we don't have access to it. So hopefully, maybe in the future, we will, and we can use that.
Well, and maybe if we have a therapeutic that does more than just liver disease, reduces cardiovascular risk and dementia and cancer and everything else, maybe if you misclassify someone that is more mild as at risk, it won't have the same detrimental effects. But no one wants to overtreat. So we do hope that the non-invasive tools will get better and better so that we can appropriately classify our patients.
Yes.
Well, another place that we struggle with is our patients with primary sclerosing cholangitis. So we talked a little bit about cholestatic liver disease and pruritus, but PSC patients have variable courses, so they don't all have very aggressive disease. But I know that for me, this is a young population that does not have a therapeutic, and in some ends up with very bad liver disease or cholangiocarcinoma. So I think there's maybe some agents coming for them. Was there anything exciting?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I mean, we have nothing for our PSC patients, right? And I've always explained to myself and to my patients that they're so heterogeneous. You wonder whether anything could apply to all of them, right? Because the effects are really dependent on the degree of and site of those biliary strictures. But having said that, there was an interesting presentation on it. This is a semi-synthetic bile acid called neuricholic acid, and this is an ongoing clinical trial. But this was an interim evaluation at week 96. So there were a total of 301 patients in the study, but 213 had reached week 96. And what they looked at, so the endpoint here, the positive endpoint, was a reduction in the alkaline phosphatase less than 1.5 times the upper limit of normal, with no worsening of fibrosis. So that was really the endpoint, and this was compared against placebo. And what they found was that at week 96, there was a significant difference between those patients on neuricholic acid. 15% of those patients had reached that endpoint as compared to 4% of patients on placebo. And what was interesting is the majority of patients were on ursodiol in the study. 71% were on ursodiol. But if the patient was not on ursodiol, the difference was even more striking. 23% of patients achieved that endpoint with the neuricholic acid, and none of the patients on placebo. So, wondering if there's somewhat of a synergistic effect or what's happening there. When they looked at the percentage of patients who had reduced fibrosis stage by one, it was 25% versus 10% placebo. There were patients who had increased their stage of fibrosis, and they did use two staging systems. One that I wasn't familiar with was the Nakanuma stage system, but also the Ludwig fibrosis staging system. But the percentage of patients who had increased fibrosis actually was much higher in the placebo patients, 40% versus 20%. So, certainly early, but promising that we may have, moving forward, some kind of treatment for our patients with PSC. That would be great.
Absolutely. And it's nice to know that there is a surrogate. I don't know how you use ursodeoxycholic acid, but if I start urso and my patient has no improvement in alkaline phosphatase or bilirubin, we might talk about stopping it. It's hard to stop something when there is no alternative. But I think if it's not working, then without a defined endpoint of success, it's a little harder to keep these patients on agents. But this I think this looks good. And if it is a synergistic with the agents that we already have, and we have other things in the pipeline, I think that these are going to be good choices for a very challenging population.
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting. We've lived through times where we had no therapies our liver patients, and now we have a variety of therapies for most liver diseases. We need to focus on autoimmune, alcohol, and PSC, and then I'll be happy.
Yes, as will our patients be happy.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I think we have one more to discuss, and that will leave on a little bit of a high point. So this was an oral presentation that looked at using the GLOBE score in patients with primary biliary cholangitis, or PBC, that were treated with seladelpar. So seladelpar is one of our newly approved PPARs. We have two of them. And this clinical trial did look at individuals that received seladelpar versus placebo. And then if you receive placebo, you could cross over after 12 months into the intervention arm, so that there are two groups, one that had a year of seladelpar and then another group that had, placebo for the beginning and then followed by, seladelpar. The GLOBE score, and, Kim, when we're discussing this, I'd like to know if you use this. This is something I don't traditionally calculate in my patients, but I know that is a valid measure for success, especially in a population. But the GLOBE score is a evaluated risk assessment tool that predicts transplant-free survival in patients with PBC, and it has a number of pretty easy variables. The math is not easy, but it uses age at the time that you started ursodeoxycholic acid, so it had to be applied then to seladelpar, bilirubin, alkaline phosphatase, albumin, and platelet count, and then you look at what happens and to see what the impact is going to be. And so they looked at this GLOBE score in this population that was treated with seladelpar and very nicely demonstrated that seladelpar improved predicted transplant-free survival. So, I think that this is what our patients want to hear. They want to hear that you have a surrogate like alkaline phosphatase or bilirubin that predicts long-term outcome, but they also want to know that long-term outcome isn't just your lab got better, but that you didn't die and you didn't need a liver transplant. And so compared to placebo, the GLOBE score really would suggest that these new classes of agents are going to be a big benefit to our patients. So I'll turn to you. Do you use the GLOBE score?
So I will confess I don't routinely use it, right? Because if you look at the components of the GLOBE score, it relies heavily on alkaline phosphatase and bilirubin, right? And you and I both know that if the bilirubin is up on a patient, their liver-related mortality is increased. And we now know from a multitude of studies that the lower your alkaline phosphatase, the better. So although I do think it is important, I don't know how it helps me so much with my patient clinically. Where I do think it's going to be of huge benefit, we have all these new therapies, all the PPARs that are, and other medications that are being approved, and they're approved under this accelerated approval process, right? And now to get full approval or ongoing approval, these studies have to show a reduction in liver-related outcomes. Well, that's tough to do in a patient population over a short period of time. And if it's becoming increasingly difficult for studies to do this, right, because of the lack of a comparison, a patient population, now that there are therapies out there, nobody's on placebo anymore. So I do think we are going to have to rely on things like this. And the GLOBE is very well validated in terms of predictability of, at least transplant-free survival, maybe not so much liver-related outcomes. But I think we're going to have to really rely on these because, again, our patients need these medications. You and I have both had experience that they work. And so, ongoing approval, I hope we can start to rely on some of these predictive scores that I think well correlate with response to these treatments.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the identification of PBC now is occurring earlier because of your family screening or we recognize that alkaline phosphatases of 250 are not normal. Might be that the majority of it is related to medication or masseled, but still people are being tested, so found at a much earlier disease state. And if something traditionally takes years to decades to cause outcome problems, you can't have a clinical trial that acquires information over that time period that leads to approval or to recognition that it's going to be a benefit for the patient population. But
exactly.
Very exciting that at least our PBC patients, maybe PSC, alcohol, and MASLD will come next, but our PBC patients really have had some game changers in their treatment options.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining the Liver Lineup Updates and Unfiltered Insights. Again, I'm Nancy Rowe, and I'm joined by my wonderful colleague, Kim Brown, and we look forward to interacting with you in the future.
Yeah. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you.